Welcome to SCOTUSCast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and the decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions are those of the speaker.
Hello, and welcome to SCOTUSCast. I'm your host, Kyle Hammerness, on behalf of the Faculty Division of the Federalist Society. We are here today to discuss Great Lakes Insurance SE versus Raiders Retreat Realty Co. LLC, in which the Supreme Court issued a 9-0 decision on February 21st, 2024. It is my honor to introduce our guest today, Professor Andrew Hesick. Professor Hesick is the Judge John J. Parker Distinguished Professor of Law and Associate Dean for Strategy and Planning at the University of North Carolina School of Law. His teaching and research interests include federal courts, administrative law, remedies, and criminal sentencing. And with that, I'd like to turn things over to our guest to discuss the overview of the case and the court's decision.
Well, thank you for having me on. So the Great Lakes case, it started out as what seemed like a basic contracts dispute case. The case involved a maritime insurance contract. Raiders wanted to get insurance for its boat. It entered into a contract with Great Lakes for insurance. And the contract had a standard choice of law clause. It said New York law would apply to claims arising under the contract or related to the contract. So subsequently, there were events that that led Raiders to want to possibly make insurance claims. But Great Lakes, it said that the insurance claims, the insurance policy was void because Raiders hadn't complied with the terms of it by not doing fire checks and providing information to Great Lakes. Okay, so far, very basic insurance claim. Great Lakes files suit in Pennsylvania in federal court. That's consistent with a form selection clause in the contract. And so because it's in Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania law sort of presumptively applies, but there is the choice of law provision in the contract. So Pennsylvania law would say, hey, follow New York law per the contract. Raiders files some counterclaims under Pennsylvania law. Now these counterclaims under Pennsylvania law, they are not available under New York law, right? So Raiders says, yes, I know that the choice of law clause would say apply New York law, which would preclude my claims under Pennsylvania law, but we're in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania law presumptively applies, and we think that under Pennsylvania has a special rule that says that applying a choice of law clause, precludes a Pennsylvania claim, basically, Pennsylvania law will trump. You're not going to enforce the choice of law clause in that context because it's against Pennsylvania's public policy, right? That's the important part. It's against Pennsylvania's public policy. Now, Great Lakes responds, well, this is a maritime insurance contract. And so Pennsylvania law should not dictate whether the choice of law clause applies. Instead, federal law should dictate whether the choice of law clause applies. And at that point, that's where the case flips from being a normal contracts case to an extremely complicated issue that led to the Supreme Court's intervention. The question was basically, does federal law control that choice of law provision? That is to say, the enforcement of the choice of law provision. And if so, if federal law does apply, what would be the content of that federal law? Right. So we actually have three really complicated issues for federal courts. The first is under Erie, is this a federal issue or a state issue? Right. Should federal law control or should state law control? The second is admiralty. Right. This is just an admiralty area. And then the third is, OK, if federal law controls, what should be the content of federal common law? So we have Erie, federal common law, and admiralty. Very complicated.
So, you know, when you look at the opinion, how does Kavanaugh, you know, address each of these issues when he's writing in the opinion?
Right. So it goes to the Supreme Court, and Great Lakes ends up winning. So the Supreme Court takes the position that federal law controls, not Pennsylvania law, and federal law is not going to follow Pennsylvania law. That was an option. It's going to be that federal law has its own separate sort of content that applies uniformly across the country. So Kavanaugh, who wrote the opinion for the court, addresses all three issues. The first was sort of eerie question: does federal law apply, or does is this a state law issue? And choice of law is probably a substantive issue to which state law would apply. I guess we know that from Claxon. And Kavanaugh says no. You know, in the context of admiralty law, then federal law applies. Admiralty is one of the exceptions to Erie, right? Because the Constitution says, or has been read, let's say, to say that there shall be federal law controlling admiralty, and that includes federal common law. Okay. It's been extended to cover maritime insurance contracts. Not the most obvious conclusion in the world, but it has been extended in that way. That was in prior opinions that wasn't questioned in this case. Okay, so that's the first two questions essentially. Like, we're in admiralty, and federal law is going to control. Now the big question is, what will be the content of that federal law? And this is where it gets really interesting, actually, because normally the Supreme Court is the one who makes up federal law, right? When they're going to create federal common law, the Supreme Court fashions it. That's not quite what happened here. So the court says, look, if there's a set federal rule, we will follow that federal rule. And if there's not a set federal rule, then we have to decide, should we make a federal rule or should we follow state law? Should we adopt state law as our federal rule? And the court said that there is a set federal rule in this context. And they said the set federal rule is that a choice of law clause applies. And presumptively, unless there's a really good federal public policy for it not to apply. So Pennsylvania public policy wouldn't matter. It would be federal public policy. And what's so interesting is the court said that the federal rule had largely been established by the lower court's decisions, by decisions of the courts of appeals. There were a few Supreme Court opinions that sort of hinted that choice of law clauses should be applied, but it was really the federal courts of appeals that the court pointed to. So there's a context where it's really interesting. The Supreme Court pointed to lower court decisions as strong evidence of establishing the federal rule, and then their decisions fashioned the federal rule that then dictated what the content of federal law would be. The court also acknowledged upfront that there's lots of complicated questions about how precisely Erie and federal common law interact with each other. And they said that they have this quote that's great. It says that basically it's one of the most complex areas in all law, and they're going to avoid it, right? And they say, like, here, the answer's easy. We're just going to follow the federal rule as established.
Great. And then obviously, Justice Thomas wrote a concurring opinion, right? And he basically is almost warning, litigants in courts, about the Wilburn Boat case. Can you go a little bit more into that? Kind of explaining what that case is about, and then also maybe how it applies in future litigation?
Yeah, sure. So Wilburn Boat is this case out of the 1950s that was sort of an anomaly, let's say, under admiralty law involving maritime insurance contracts. So in Wilburn Boat, there was a claim for a warranty under, I think it was under a contract, and the Supreme Court said there was no set federal rule about warranties. And therefore, state law would control the warranty claims under those maritime contracts. Now, the problem with that is the court has said, look, maritime contracts, they're part of admiralty. Admiralty controls, so federal law should control across the board. And so And so it should never be that there's sort of like sometimes federal law and sometimes state law. As a matter of just how the Erie analysis shakes out, it should all be federal law. It's just like, what would the content of that federal law be? And what I think Justice Thomas is really getting at is that Wilburn Boat is anomalous for saying that state law plays a role here. It just doesn't, right? This is all federal law. And now there are ways of reconciling it. You can say like, oh, in some context, federal law should follow state law, but it would be a matter of federal law, right? And the way Wilburn is written is much more like, well, state law is controlling here. And it's just, it is confusing.
And then I guess if we're just, you know, looking out into the future, what, I mean, how does this shape the landscape of admiralty law and that sort of thing as we look forward into, obviously, there's going to be future litigation from obviously different parties. You know, it's inevitable that it comes up and these cases are then used as precedent. Right? What do you see as being the real ramification of a decision like this?
Yeah, so I think two things. So theoretically, right, is that federal law is going to just play more and more of an important role in admiralty law. It already had, but now it's going to play even more because there was Wilburn Boat out there, which suggested state law sometimes played a role. It was confusing. This helped clean it up, but the way that it cleaned it up is basically to say federal law is always going to control. You know, to the extent we're going to have any state law, it's only going to be because the federal courts have decided to incorporate it, not because they are bound by state law. What's interesting about that is actually it shows that admiralty law is really one of those small bubbles that sort of goes in the opposite direction from the general trend of the court towards not making federal common law, right? This is very opposite the more recent Bivens cases like Abbasi, in that the court says like this is a realm where we get to make all sorts of law, and that's actually been the case, let's say, since post Erie, right? I mean, after Erie, they said admiralty is one of those areas where there can be federal common law, and they are capitalizing on it right now, and they are really making it. More practically, I think what happens is, you know. Almost, there must, how do I say this? I'm sure that most people engaged in maritime commerce are entering into contracts that have choice of law provisions. And now they have a little bit more clarity about how those choice of law provisions are going to be enforced. And so I don't know that in the end, it's going to affect things too much. It might reduce the cost of business because the contracts are a little clearer and they know exactly which law is going to apply. It's going to be the law that they have specified. They don't have to worry about like the idiosyncrasies of Pennsylvania or Delaware or Florida. They know that if we pick New York, it's going to be New York unless there's some really strong reason why it's not going to be New York.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us, Andy. Do you have any concluding thoughts, points that you want to make or do you think that settles it?
I think that settles it. I think that settles it. I do think that there's some areas of the law where the court has done a really good job over the last like 20 or 30 years cleaning it up, areas that were so complicated, like complete preemption or Rooker-Feldman, and where there were just decisions going in different directions and it was hard to figure out what was going on. This isn't quite to that level, but it's definitely pushing in that direction, saying, because Wilburn Boat was one of those decisions that you're like, how do you sort of make this all work? And they have said, you make it work by sort of ignoring Wilburn Boat. So, you know, it, regardless of what one thinks of like the precise outcome, I think that part of it is good.
Well, Andy, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is essential to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUS Cast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.